Hello and welcome to another episode of Open Studio. I'm Martina Flor and I wanted to do a little intro to this beautiful episode that I have recorded with Maria Montes, just to give you a little bit of a framework or a little bit of a background information about this episode. I recorded this episode during a retreat that I was hosting with the members of my business coaching program called Leap Now. Maria was in Berlin at that time, and I invited her to my studio to have this live session where also the members of my coaching program had the chance to ask her questions live. And I've known Maria for a while. Maria is a lettering artist. I'm going to make a full presentation of her and her profile inside the episode. But Maria is a lettering artist and type designer and illustrator. And she has been in business for so long. And what I love about her profile is that, or I think I resonate with her because we have a kind of a similar path. We are both living in countries where we were not born. So I live in Berlin and in Germany. And I initially, I'm originally from Argentina. Maria relocated to, Maria is from Barcelona, Spain, and she relocated to Australia. And her story is very similar to mine in the sense of like she came to Australia almost not knowing the language, with no network whatsoever. And she built a thriving career through all the challenges. And she is so wise in that sense because she has been so resilient throughout her career as a lettering artist. She has gone through all of these challenges that many of us don't face normally. And that makes her a very wise person, a very, a very humble person at the same time. And I love the fact that the members of my coaching program had the chance to ask her questions live. So I believe that this episode is very special in that sense because you will be hearing from a very talented, a very resilient, a very wise lettering artist, born in Barcelona, living in Australia. And you will get to listen firsthand her stories of overcoming challenges and what are the things that are important when it comes to building a thriving business, doing what you love. So I hope you enjoyed this episode with Maria Montes. Hello and welcome to another episode of Open Studio. I'm your host, Martina Flor, and we are starting our fifth season of this podcast, which is wild. And in this show, I share strategies and tactics to build a career as a lettering artist or illustrator. In today's show, I have Maria Montes with me. Maria is a Barcelona-born, NARM-based, multilingual, multicultural lettering designer and illustrator specialized in branding assets and calligraphy education. She's originally from Catalonia. Maria moved to Australia in 2006, where she currently lives. Actually, we're going to update that in a second. Maria's creative practice is set by the principles of never stop learning, sharing knowledge, and creating emotion through her work. Hi, Maria. How are you doing? I'm so happy to see you, and I'm so happy that you're in Berlin. We're actually having, you cannot notice this for those watching on YouTube and for those watching this this episode live, we are face to face, which is very weird in these times, right? And normally when I record this podcast, I'm just remotely recording the podcast, and I'm really happy that you are here then, and that you said yes to my invitation to join this very special podcast, because we are recording this podcast with live audience, which is all the members of our retreat, the retreat that we host inside my group coaching program for lettering artists and illustrators. And they will be also in the chat making questions as we go. Right. But I have a ton of things to talk to you about and to ask you about. Yeah. And you have been in the show before.
Yes. And
Would
we
you?
were very far away from each other.
Yes, you were in Australia at that time. And I remember it was the episode number 22. So those were one of the first episodes of the podcast. And you can go check it out. It's the episode number 22 if you're curious about that episode with Maria. Today, I want to, and I told you about this, that I want to dive deeper. You know, in that episode, we spoke about learning and how learning can really impact your life as a creative and your practice. And today I want to dive deeper into your story because, you know, I know that as a creative and also as a person, you went through a lot of different challenges. And I know that many of the members of my coaching program and also the listeners of this podcast will resonate with that. You know, at some point of your life, you had a career crisis, which I know that many people will relate to, and I can personally relate to. You moved cities, you relocated cities, and all the challenges that come with that.
And continents, yeah.
Totally. And you were born in Barcelona, as I mentioned before, and you moved in 2006 to Australia,
Yes.
right? Yes, and you found your way professionally in a
In
new
Australia.
country. So I want to dive into all of this
Yes.
during this episode. Maria, I normally like to start with a question that will probably open a lot of different venues of conversation. So how does a creative, an artist, or an illustrator find that sweet spot between what they love doing and what other people want from them? How do you find that overlap between, or that intersection between your interests and what others are willing to pay for, and through that sustain your living as an artist or a creative?
But in the past, at least decade, within graphic design, there is also a lot of specializations. And so I personally had a lot of interest. Like I was doing graphic design, but at the same time, I knew I loved illustration. I loved also textile design and I loved typography. And so the first thing is like, do you know if you want to specialize in something or what you want to do is graphic design in general, more like an all round up personality, or you want to focus on something that is more specific? I think if you know the answer to this question, you already have 50% or more of your path carved. Because once you know that, then it's all about crafting and making yourself better at that thing you want to do. And that might take a long time. Like I've been in the industry for many years. I graduated in 2000, so it's 23 years. And the first 10 years I was working for a studio, so I wasn't on my own making all these type of decisions. My decision was I want to work as a graphic designer and make a living and be an independent person and live out of my graphic design career. But once I jumped independently, then I had a lot of questions to answer.
Let's back up a little bit and hear a little bit about your creative path. I would like to know, you know, where you started, when you started with design, and when did you decide to specialize into what you do right now? And then I will dive deeper into other stories that have to do with relocating cities and finding, you know, your passion and your niche.
Okay, so to summarize what I just said before, in case you lost it in 1 minute, is if you know what you want, you already have 50% of the path carved. The other 50% is investing time in getting very good at that thing you want to do and show the work you want to get hired for. If this doesn't happen exactly and it's not aligning what you love for what you are getting paid, it's absolutely okay because you can still produce work on your own and you do not need a client to produce that thing that you love. But what you need is to get paid enough to make a living, to survive as a designer and as an artist. And this depends on many factors, such as in which city you live, what's the cost of living, what are your non-negotiable needs, if you have a family, if you have a mortgage, if you have people depending on you, or if you are just on your own. and what is your age and what is your expertise and everything like that. So that's the summary of before in case you missed it. My beginnings are in Barcelona. I graduated in 2000 and I never in my life ever dreamed with being an independent designer, because I don't come from a family that are business entrepreneurs. No one ever gave me support in going on my own. The opposite, like being a graphic designer in my family was a bit weird because they really didn't understand what I was studying. They just thought, okay, whatever you do, just get a job. So I worked in Barcelona for 6 years. And in the last studio, I was surrounded by people from other countries. So I was working with three women from Germany, actually, and one designer from France, one designer from Italy, and my boss and art director from Argentina. And I was the only person who didn't speak English. So I realized every other designer in the room spoke English, Spanish, and their native languages. And I felt like I was in disadvantage. And I thought, okay, it's time for me to step it up and to actually do what I would love, which is moving overseas, learning English, and then working as a graphic designer in another country. I thought that would help me in my portfolio and that would strengthen my positioning.
Just to dive deeper into that part of your story. So you moved to Barcelona, you were born and raised in Barcelona, right?
I was born and raised 1 hour north of Barcelona in a small town in front of the Mediterranean. And then moved to Barcelona in 1996 and studied 4 years of graphic design.
And then you decided to move to Australia. So I want to ask you what that did for you. And I'm not only speaking about, you know, what it did for you in terms of getting jobs or the kind of jobs you were getting or the kind of jobs, or I think in the beginning you got a job at an agency or a studio, but also what did that do to you at a personal level?
Yes, many things. In my family, no one is interested in traveling outside of Spain. And so when I told them I was going to Australia, of course, they really did not understand, but it was just my choice. So it wasn't a question. It was just like a statement. I'm going now. My level of English at that point was like, hello, good morning, thank you. That's it, not a lot more. So I landed there. I didn't have a network of friends or family. And in that time, as a Spanish citizen, I could only go there as a student, a full-time student. So I paid for 5 months in an English college and I was already 29. So if you are thinking you are late, I was moving into another country for the first time at 29 with no English. So probably you are better than me already in that point. And obviously at the English school, everyone was a lot younger than me. And by a lot younger, I'm saying probably 8 to 10 years. So I realized, okay, a lot of other people are younger than me here. I felt like I have to move quick because I had 5 months of English school and I wanted to get a job. And at that time, to get a job in Australia, you need a sponsorship, meaning a company that has to sponsor you legally. And this is not easy in Australia. It takes time and money. And everyone around me, including my English teachers, told me, this is very difficult. This is very, very difficult. And I thought, okay. So I tried it. I was very, very, very fortunate because my English wasn't great. But I found a studio and they were looking for three designers because they just lost three graphic designers. And I went in and I think they saw my hunger for working and living there. And they gave me the sponsorship. So my teachers told me that was a miracle.
Okay.
Yes.
And so when you arrived to Australia, you first trained yourself in the language because you didn't know how to speak the language essentially. And then you found the sponsor who gave you a job at an agency. What I know that eventually you started your own business or you went freelance. So I want to understand what was, you know, what happened in between, between getting that first job and deciding to go freelance and start your own business. What were the things that led you to do that? What do you think that this will enable you to do, as opposed to, you know, being employed in a studio or an agency?
Okay, that many things happened, so I'll try to summarize, but many things happened. So in 2006 I moved. In 2007 I started as a graphic designer in a studio. What you asked me before, what did Australia do to me? It's wanting to know myself better, because I didn't have a network of friends, so that meant I had a lot of time for myself. I think in Barcelona, it's very easy to get lost in the surroundings, the culture, the friendships, the everything that the city offers you. But Australia gave me a lot of space, physical and mental space. And I started to question, why am I here and what am I looking for and what do I want? And I start to question constantly these things. And one thing I realized is, well, I knew I wasn't going to stay in the studio where they hired me for a long time. And I didn't know the answer to what is next. I also realized that I was an okay graphic designer, but I didn't think I was a really amazing graphic designer. So I started to think, what is next for me? I also went to a conference in Australia around 2008 because I felt I needed motivation. And it just happened to be that I went to the conference and there was 8 or 9 speakers and all of them were men. So by the end of the conference, instead of feeling motivated, I felt right off the opposite. So I felt very deflated. I felt like, so where am I going to find the people that look like me and that sound like me? Because all these people on the stage were very confident men, and that seemed that they had everything figured out. And I thought, yeah, but you were not born in this situation where you are speaking today. What happened behind, which is what you're asking me now, what happened before now? Because there are so many things happened. But when you hear someone being successful or apparently successful on the stage, I didn't find myself. So, I decided that because I didn't know what's next, I save up enough money in Brisbane to take time off. And that was the answer to what is next, is taking time off. And because I now could speak English, the answer was, okay, I have enough money and now I have enough English for traveling. So I'm going to travel around the world. And so it wasn't literally like every place around the world, but I took 12 months off. And during these 12 months, I tried to ask the questions, what is next, so many times. I came back to Australia after 1 year. This traveling year, I still think is one of the best things I have ever done, because I visited many cultures. I saw many different people, different and living differently. And that gave me a lot of good things for my own perspective. And right before leaving Australia, I fell in love. So at the end of the trip, I decided to go back. And at that point, I still did not know what is next. So I went back and the studio that they were sponsoring me called me and said, okay, we want you back. So I went back for a few more months and started to think, what is next? What is next? And my next question, my answer to that point was, I want to specialize. I think being an all-rounded graphic designer is not my best strength. I want to specialize, and could be illustration or typography. Mm. It took me many months of the year to decide between one or the other. But at the end of that year, I decided typography. And then I thought, I'm ready for a change of city. So I was living in Brisbane, which is the northeast. And I knew that my city, my place was going to be Melbourne, which is around at least 1,700 kilometers south. So I thought between this move between Brisbane and Melbourne, I'm going to go to Barcelona, to where I studied graphic design and do a 6-month specialization in typography. I knew some of the teachers in that postgrad, and also my calligraphy teacher from 1996 was still teaching, and he was teaching a part of that post-graduation course.
You know, I have a question in regards to specialization, because you mentioned that you have a background as a graphic designer, and then you mentioned that through this experience, or through this moment where you said, hey, I need to find, I need to see what's next for me, you decided to specialize. And I want to ask you, what specializing opened up for you? Because if you think about it, specializing is actually narrowing down your possibilities, or you may think that this is actually narrowing down your possibilities. If I specialize too much, then there will be fewer things that I will be able to do. And I know that many of the listeners may think like, well, I don't want to specialize because it's going to narrow down my possibilities. And I want to know, how did that play out for you? Specializing was opening new doors, or the opposite?
Yes, at that point, I didn't look at a specialization like narrowing down, because at that point, what I was thinking is, if I'm a graphic designer with very strong skills in typography, I'm just going to be a better graphic designer. When I was considering illustration, was sort of the same mindset. I thought, well, up to this point, I cannot take jobs that include illustration within my graphic design job. But if I learn how to illustrate it, I can include one more asset in my toolbox. So it wasn't that thing that I'm going to get rid of a lot of things, but I'm going to strengthen one section of the folio. And then I'm going to look for a graphic design studio that has a very strong typographic presence in their outcome, in their work. And the most important thing for me that brought me the going back to study and the specializing is that it was nearly 9 years working as a graphic designer, and I had lost a lot of my passion. And by going back to study, all this passion came back straight away. Like, I fell in love with my profession again. That's what this did.
I can so much relate to that. I think I went through the same process. And also, let me know in the chat if this happened to you as well. Like, I feel that, you know, as a graphic designer, just tell a little bit of my story as well. But as a graphic designer, I also had a moment where I thought, like, I'm doing everything and nothing. Like, I feel that I don't feel good enough at anything. And I remember that at that time, going back to study was, or to learning was, a way of like finding myself again, or falling myself in love with what design is about, or what creativity is about, right? And when I look at, you know, your path and the way you decided to specialize into something, and I look at your portfolio now, which I'm going to add to the show notes for all listeners to be able to go to Maria's portfolio, which is amazing. And what I love about it is that, you know, even though you specialize in letter design and type design, when you go onto your portfolio, you can see such a variety of projects tackled through the lens of a letter designer, right? And I see, you know, branding projects, I see packaging, I see lettering, I see calligraphy as well. Like, and I feel that a specialization gave you, in a way, a lens through which you look at the world, right? And with this, I want to segue into, you know, your personal projects, which are, you know, are showing up often in your portfolio. And I want to touch on one specifically that caught my attention, because when I look through your portfolio, I can see that there are topics that are important to you. And you just mentioned something about this conference you went to, and there were only men on stage, and how that struck you in a way, saying like, well, how can this be? You know, how is this possible? And I can see when I scroll down your website, I can see that there are topics that are important to you, like mental health and fostering women. And it seems that your interests also inform many of your personal projects, right? And there's one that caught my attention that I'm going to share in the show notes with all the listeners, and I'm going to share in the chat with our members so that you can go check it out, which is this one of No Means No. And perhaps you can tell us a little bit about it. Perhaps you can describe visually what the project is about and what were the motivations to start that project.
Yes, that project. When I visited you in 2019, I then went to Porto. And in Porto, I was just having a coffee and I saw someone walking, a young woman walking around, and she had tattooed on one leg, no, and on the other leg, still no. And I remember looking at the tattoo, looking at her and looking at again, and it really shocked me, the tattoo, because I don't know the reason why she tattooed this message, but I know how I interpreted the message. And I thought about this tattoo many times. And that was a very young woman, and I wanted to take a photo. And by the time I even thought about it, she was gone. And that image has been on my mind for a long time. And when it stays with me, I know that I have to do something with it. And for me, currently, what it gives me a lot of motivation is my personal work, my personal projects, because I don't need someone to ask me, I want you to do something that says no means no. I can do it myself. Mm-hmm. And so when I have this interest on my head, then I'm like, well, I'm just going to do it. So when I did this piece, there is two parts, one that is a lot more illustrative and one that is more typographic. So the first one, which is more illustrative, is mixing. My grandmother was a seamstress, and her passion, of course, she never worked as a fashion designer, but that was her dream. And I have in her house like three wardrobes full of her own clothes. She designed and sew and create her own clothing. And a lot of this clothing, I'm wearing them constantly because we are not the same height, but the same size. She has very advanced Alzheimer's now for 16 years, so there is no conversations going on, but I have kept a lot of this clothing and I wear them myself. And my grandmother was someone really strong, and the only person in my family that I know that has some creative output. So the illustration is based on one of the blouses that she was wearing and that I have myself. Mm-hmm. And that means a lot of the times as a woman, I feel like you need to be very sweet. You need to be very polite. You need to say no, even when you want to say no, but you say it in a way, in a tone, in a manner that is not going to offend whoever is on the other side. Although the other person might be saying or doing something you really don't want them to do. So the first part is when you try to say no, being polite and being sweet and being like, okay, yes, but no, actually no. The second part is only typographic and it says still no. And that piece is about being a woman and facing many situations when you have to say no, and with one time is not enough.
Yeah, I really love the project and also the story behind it. And as I said before, I love how you approach this project and this topic from the lens of a typographer. And the way you describe the storytelling of your pieces is still being told from the shape of letters, right? And I want to go back to one of the questions on the chat where Jogi is asking, how did you know what to specialize in? It seems that the topic of specialization resonates with our listeners and also our members. So if you love, and this is typically, you know, for us creatives that we love a lot of different things. We have a lot of different interests. So how do you find that thing to, you know, to marry with? How do you find that one thing that becomes your thing, right? If you have many, many different interests.
Yes, and that is why at the very beginning of the podcast, I said, if you know what you want, that's more than 50% of the pathway. Because in my case, I have, or I had, probably I still have, what is called a shiny object syndrome, which it doesn't depend of whatever is on trend. It depends that I am very curious person and I love learning about many things. And it is very difficult for me sometimes to know, okay, what is that thing I want to know? And when I see someone that has very clear vision and interest, I'm always feeling very, very envious because I think, wow, I just love so much, so many things. So how did I know? Okay, I knew the two topics because of two different things. So one, I thought of illustration. And the reason is because in Spain, before I moved to Australia, I worked with a graphic designer that was very good at illustrating. And he was producing projects that he was including his illustration skills within the outcome. And I was sitting next to him and I was very jealous all the time because I only had, well, I had less assets to work with, and he had the same assets as me, but if he felt that he needed illustration, he would do it himself. So then I felt like I'm jealous of this person's abilities all the time, and I should just learn. So the first thing I knew is like, okay, I knew at that time I was always asking myself, oh, I wish I could do that. That's one of the topics I thought of specializing, because I knew the feeling while working with him for 7 months. I was always thinking, I wish I could do that. The second topic was typography. And I knew that I wanted typography because I felt I was very bad at it. I felt like I know how to use typography, but I know I'm not that good. I'm actually pretty weak. I knew how to typeset. Yes. I know how to use some fonts. Yes. I know all the basics, all the fundamentals, but I felt like actually I'm not that great and I should be much better at this. So sometimes your weakest spot is what you need to focus on.
And this is very encouraging, because in a way what you're combining is first your interests, right? What you feel in your body and in your mind that is really interesting for you and you enjoy doing, like for instance the illustrations, and combining that with something you want to learn more about, right? Which is typography. You felt that you were not really good added, and you had a lot to learn. So those are two driving points. What are the things that you are interested in, and what are the things that you could learn more of, right? Yes. And combining that, you found that sweet spot, right? Now, if I may add to that, is you were also lucky in finding that one thing, right? And kind of through learning, falling in love with it. But if I may add to that and answer to Jogi, there's a lot of trial and error as well. If you have different interests, perhaps you try going into a certain discipline or a certain thing that you thought you would love doing, and you realize that that is not your thing or that you don't enjoy it as much. Sometimes you see other people doing things, and when you do them yourself and you think like, oh, that's really cool, maybe that's my thing. And when you try yourself, it's like, that's definitely not my thing, right? And I think as creatives, we should keep our minds open in terms of like, okay, if we're interested in a certain thing, try it out. If that's not for you, it's just not for you. If you don't feel good doing it, it's just not for you. I remember that as a lettering artist, I also tried a lot of different things, and I even tried a mural painting, and I discovered that this is not for me, right? But you have to sometimes you have to try it to just find out, you know, what your thing is and what you will be willing to specialize in, right? So thank you so much for those insights. I wanted to ask you about, you know, we were talking about personal work before, and you know, when I look at your portfolio, you have a lot of work that has to, like, a lot of professional work with brands and agencies, but you also have a lot of personal work. And I want to ask you, in which ways the personal work was a motor in your business as a freelancer, and also in your development as a creative?
Yeah. I want to add something to the question before. Whatever you do to find that specialization, if you look for it, it's going to inform whatever happens next. So it's not like an isolation. Everything that you do, every step in your career, is going to lead to something else, that it's going to be a threat. It's not like I went there, this wasn't for me, and then I move on. Okay, that thing you went and did and realized is not for you, it's going to help you a lot on the next step. Because you need to know what you want as much or more as what you don't want. And sometimes there is no other way than trying it out. And that is going to keep opening and closing doors for you. That is going to be a threat. The problem with the threat is that you never see it on the present tense. You only see it on the past tense. So when you have done the walk and then you look back and realize every dot was actually connected. Because my career and everyone's career is like this, eh? It's never like this linear. And so you have to go through all these doors, and every door is going to inform you of something about you or about that thing, and then the next thing. So yeah, I wrote about this on an article. So if you want to read about this, there is an article on my blog, on my website, called Finding Your Inner Compass. And I explained this I did for myself. So hopefully on the reference at the end of the blog, hopefully you can find something valuable there as well.
And it's an encouraging perspective, because it means that everything you do capitalizes on your next thing, right? Whereas oftentimes we feel that trying out, you know, we want to go the quick path, and we want the shortcut onto finding out about certain things, and certain things need to have those steps in between, right? Need to have those experiences that inform your next steps, right? And I love that the way, or your perspective, has to do with capitalizing on your experiences, and not so much seen as, you know, wasting time into something that didn't work out, you know? So if I may go back to the personal work, because I know that this is an important topic for most of those listening, for me as well as a creative, for those that are in the chat, our members, that, you know, we often find difficult to find that balance between personal work and client work, and how much time you're investing in one or the other. And, you know, when I look at your portfolio, I see a big amount of personal work and beautiful personal work. And I wonder what are the things that this personal work in which you invested a lot of time, what are the doors that open for you? Because, you know, going back to what we were just talking about, you know, many may tell you, hey, what are you working on that if no one is paying for that, right? Why are you investing so much time in that if, you know, you're not going to be paid for it, right? So I wonder, what are the doors that those projects open for you? In, you know, in a in a professional way, but also in a personal and creative way?
Personal work has given me the best of my career. So I consider myself very lucky and privileged, because this was never a strategy I was playing with. Or, like when I started on my own, first of all, I want like a really brief overview of just what happened before, is that after I studied typography, you might think that I just found that job I was looking for. But when I finished my specialization in typography and I was ready to look for that amazing graphic design studio that is going to give me this position where I can show off my typographic new skills, actually I had a phone call of a friend of mine offering me to be a textile designer. And at that time, I did not have illustration skills because I had to choose between illustration or typography. And at the end, I chose typography. So when this phone call came, I thought, well, I totally chose the wrong specialization because now this work comes in and it's about illustration and I have no idea. And I said, look, I don't know anything about textile design and I don't illustrate normally. And my friend said, yes, but I know you can do it and I want you to do it. Do you want to do it? And at that time, I didn't have any jobs lined up. And I said, yes, I will try. So for these 2 years, right after my specialization, I learned how to illustrate and become a professional textile designer, thanks to YouTube. So everything I know today about illustration is learning by myself. So I have typography, which is an academic pathway, and illustration, which is a self-taught way. And both of these things, I have very good things to say about the both pathways. So then I was working full-time as a textile designer. So forget typography, lettering, calligraphy, and anything in between. I was only drawing and I was getting paid. I was happy. I was looking at people on the street wearing my textile prints. Like I was in New York City in 2012 and people on the streets were wearing my designs. So it was like that. I didn't know this could happen and it was a reality. Now, what happened is one day, everything is going great, but one day I receive an email from the company in Mongolia who were paying my work, saying that thank you very much for your work, but we cannot keep you in the books and happy Chinese New Year. So I lost everything. I lost my work in one email in three sentences. And I did not choose to go on my own. It was just that it happened this way. And at that point, I was many years into graphic design and then illustration and typography. And my partner had a good job and told me, take 6 months off and stop. So during these 6 months, the only thing I knew is that I now have illustration and typography skills and what happens if I put them together. And I started to create personal work for the first time. So my first personal piece is 2014, out of a moment where I don't have any work. I don't know what is next. I only know that I love letters and illustration. And I started to create. And after my first piece, which in my head, I'm a graphic designer. So when I was producing a personal piece, I was like, what am I doing? Am I dreaming? Like what? This is the thing that artists do. I didn't understand this is something I can also do, but I did it. I did it. It took me 3 weeks. At the end of it, I had the biggest smile in my life after the piece. And then I brought it to a group exhibition and I sold the piece. So that was the first sort of like alarm, like good alarm. Then someone called me and asked me, are you interested in giving us 4 more copies of this piece? We are going to London to an art fair and we will take the piece with us. And I thought, what? I said, yes. So they took it and sold the 4 pieces in London. And I thought, okay. Then a friend of mine called me and said, okay, Maria, you know, Bloody Marys are not a big deal in Barcelona. No one drinks this here. Why don't you do a gin and tonic piece? And I thought, what? Another piece. Okay, I did it. I sold copies straight away. And then I got an email and from a venue in Melbourne. And they told me, hey, Maria, we have seen your cocktail series. And I thought, oh, series? Okay. We have a cocktail venue. Do you want to have a solo exhibition? And I thought, I must be dreaming. I must be dreaming. So at that point, I was 8 months with no work and a little bit of freelance work by accident, just like people understanding what I'm doing and coming and asking me to get work for them. And then I thought, okay, well, 8 months in, my partner is still happy to support me a few more months. So I'm going to block another 5 months and produce an entire series of illustrated cocktail artworks. And in 2015, as a graphic designer, I had my first solo exhibition as an artist. And that for me was like, I thought this is impossible. But after that, many things have happened. So that was just the beginning.
And I want to pick up on one of the questions on the chat, which comes from Pia, you know, speaking about the personal work and all of these amazing things that happened to you after starting this series. How do you go from that to finding clients that will want that from you? How did this transition happen for you?
Very slow. Very slow. Like I'm talking about years. It's very slow. Nothing happened instantly. I didn't know that either. Nothing happened instantly. So at that point was the beginning of Instagram. And also I was using Behance, which still exists. And you can use it too. It's free. So at that point, I was publishing a lot of my textile design work. And people who saw that type of work started to commission that thing that they saw. So, you do textile design or surface patterns. So I started to get clients in this direction. And I'm like, okay, yes, I can do that. And then also people that were working around me in my co-working studio saw me that every morning I was doing calligraphy. And this was for me. This was my way of meditating. This was my everyday morning practice. 1 or 2 hours before opening my laptop, I was just doing calligraphy. It's something I've done many years. It's something I love. It's something that makes me happy inside and makes me more relaxed. So they saw me and they had never seen a calligrapher before. And they said, what is this, Maria? And I thought, what do you mean? Like in Barcelona, this is something common. So I said, calligraphy, but can you teach us? And I thought, well, I have never taught anything in my life, but well, could be. And they said, yeah, we want to learn. And from there, I started teaching, and teaching became an income. Something that made me the happiest, but made me financially sustainable as well.
You know, opportunities show up in unexpected places, but you know, I feel that I need to say that you first needed to do that thing in order to find that overlap, everything, right? And this goes back to what we were just talking about before, which has to do with, you know, doing these tests and seeing, you know, trying out and seeing which doors open for you, right? Now, I want to pick up on some questions that pop up in the chat. Some of them are very candid, and I love that Jogi is taking the opportunity to have you here to ask you an honest question on how much did you sell your first pieces for? The first pieces that you sold, the cocktail pieces that you were mentioning? If you're willing to share or if you remember?
I don't know if it's the same. Probably. It's probably the same price that is still up on my online store. I sold a piece that I think was 50 by 70 centimeters. And in Australian dollars, it's $285. In euros, maybe it's around 210, or 220 euros for a 50 by 70.
It's a reproduction.
It's a reproduction.
Okay.
So, and there's another question.
There's another question coming from... I know it was here. Another question in regards to this... from Anna, this YouTube tutorials that you were watching. Do you have any reference? Do you remember which ones they were? No. Okay. Amazing.
No, but I was consuming everything. Everything from drawing a flower, from making a repeat pattern, from everything. Like, it was like every day. Because at that time I was working with, we had a specific projects. So sometimes we could do whatever we wanted because I had a partnership with a fashion designer and she's very, very good at knowing what is coming next. So she will tell me, okay, we should be working on these type of things because these are coming. And so I would look at what she's showing me. Sometimes it's all vector based. Sometimes it's just hand drawn and a scan. Sometimes it's mixed media. And so whatever is that trend coming in, I had to adjust to that technique. And so that technique could be anything from geometric drawings to florals, to landscape cities, or to a feather that is still today. I'm still licensing that feather from that time I was illustrating. So whatever the trend was in or whatever the client was commissioning, I had to first learn the technique of drawing. And then if it was a repeat, learn how to create the repeat. And if it was digital, how to do also variations on the repeat. So working with Illustrator and working with different layers and creating like from the same design, six combinations of colors. So I was consuming a lot of this type of information from YouTube, from anywhere and everywhere. Yeah.
Maria, it's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing all the things that you shared in this episode. We're getting to the end. And, you know, I want to ask you one question that I hope it will bring a strong insight to our listeners and also to the members that are listening to this podcast live. And I feel, and I see myself, I feel as a creative, but also I see that coming up often in my community of students that, you know, it's no question that, you know, life has picked up a faster pace and that things around us change faster than before, or we feel that they are changing faster than before. And creatives that are trying to make a living with their skills nowadays, they feel that they need to take care of a ton of different stuff. Online presence, a website, SEO, client outreach, social media, technological updates. And on top of that, stay at the top of the game in their craft or whatever it is that they do, or whatever it is that is their thing, right? So what would you say to a creative that is trying to find their way into the industry and is faced with all of these things and having to tackle all of those things? What would you recommend them to focus on? What are the few things that they should definitely focus on, regardless of what are all of the other things that they need to be taking care of?
I think the first question in here is, do you want to work for yourself or do you want to work for somebody else? Because all these things that
here we are always speaking to our community, which is
working for themselves.
Exactly. These are creative entrepreneurs that have started their freelance business, right? And they have, you know, they have taken that step of, they believe that this is the container for them to first enable them to do the work that they want to do, but also to enable them to have the lifestyle that they want to have, right? And as entrepreneurs, they are faced with all this different stuff. Not only when you're starting out, setting up
the tax number and the financial whatever and getting a bank account, you know, from that to all of the rest, social media, branding, your website, your portfolio, right? Building that portfolio. So looking back at your journey and also the things that you do nowadays as a creative, because you continue working as a freelancer and running your own creative business. When you look back and when you look at the things that are working for you today and that worked for you in the past, what would you say? Yes, all of the things, you will have to take care of them at some point, but never forget about this and that. This, if you need to start somewhere, start with this, or don't lose the focus of this. What would be those few things?
That's a very difficult question, because yes, I'm a one business person, only one, I do everything. And yeah, everything you said is part of my practice. I think if you are on your own, you need to think that what you are doing is the business of creativity. And that means you need to learn about financial literacy. You need to learn how much finances you need every month to make a living. You have to have a very clear understanding of your reality, of your needs, of what is negotiable and non-negotiable expenses. It's like doing a very deep understanding of what is your situation and what is your business situation. So your personal life and your business life, and understand what are the expenses I'm facing every month. What do I need to cover to be sustainable as a creative? To understand that we need to learn about money, which is never taught in probably anywhere. And we need to learn about that money is something that we might like it or not, but is an essential tool to move through society. So the money you need and the money that you might ask for your work, this is very difficult. It might take time, because it's taking me, for me, like all these years to navigate and understand the situation where I am, what are my needs. I think that's important, because apart from, of course, your creative skills, but your creative skills need to be hand by hand with making a sustainable living out of your practice. And I think for me, the sentence, the business of creativity has made me more rooted into understanding that I am not a freelancer, I'm a business of one. And as a business of one, I do not only work for clients. I actually do, as you mentioned, my accountancy, my marketing, my website, my socials, my SEO, my mental health, my own personal work and motivation, and then client work, and then the estimations, and then the invoicing, and then the looking after the invoices that have not been paid, and then looking after the inquiries that never came back to me, and then getting in touch with those people that maybe forgot about me, but they love me. And it's like, it's something that I need to take care of, same as my friends. I need to take care of them. So client relationships, but relationships in general, financial literacy, and strengthening your creative skills, whatever your creative skill is that you want to get better at. So,
so good, Maria. Putting a blanket of like reality also on top of this, because at the end of the day, we are running a creative business, and we also need to be trained in that, in not only doing the work and the creative work and really being really good at it, but also being able to run a business. And I bet that the members that are now on the chat are saying like, oh, I'm in the right place right now, because I, you know, this takes place in the coaching program that they signed up for. So thank you so much, Maria, for being there today and for sharing all of the gold that you have shared throughout the session. Maria, for those listening, where can they find you? We're going to add the link to your website to our show notes and also all of the other social handles. But let us know where people can find you.
You can find me on my website, mariamontes.net, or socials. I am Maria Montes. And I send an email newsletter every 2 months. And this is a lot more personal, so a little bit more than maybe my website and my socials. And if you subscribe, you will hear from me 6 times a year. So in these 3 places mainly.
Amazing. I'm going to add all of this to the show notes so that everybody can find you. Thank you, Maria, again. Let's go have dinner together now. Yes. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and see you on the next episode of Open Studio. Bye-bye. So this is it. I hope you loved this episode. You can find me, the host of the show, on social networks at Martina Flor on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you have a question or comments, go to martinaflor.com/podcast, where you can see previous episodes, find show notes, and send voice memos with your comments and questions. You can also watch these episodes on YouTube. Just go to martinaflor.com/YouTube to find them. You can, of course, listen to all our episodes on your favorite podcast platform. If you loved this episode, subscribe to this podcast. And if you leave us a review, it will help others find us. Thank you all for listening, and see you in the next episode of Martina Flor's Open Studio. Bye-bye.